Hello, this is the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A 20-foot-high palisade hid Stonehenge 5,000 years ago, while in Israel a 3,000-year-old apiary is discovered. A new film inspired by Anglesey's prehistoric past is now open to the public in Wales, and we have news of a prehistory project in West Yorkshire. There's a report on a chariot find at Iron Age settlement site in Scotland, while in the US a Missouri cave painting is giving ancient insight into the Cahokian people. Prehistoric Pacific Islanders grow in stature and in controversy, and on a volunteer project, an ancient carved stone is unearthed in Orkney. Finally, also in the Orkneys, the Ring of Brodgar's place in the landscape is questioned. Tourists who complain about the fence put up around Stonehenge in the 70s should spare a thought for their Neolithic ancestors. They couldn't even see the site because of a huge wooden barrier. Archaeologists have found traces of the 20-foot-high timber fence that snaked almost 2 miles across the Salisbury Plain and hid sacred ceremonies from locals more than 5,000 years ago. Now, trenches have been dug along the line. Researchers believe the palisade took as it stretched from the east of the ancient stone circle past the Heelstone and to the west before heading south. Experts believe that the time and energy taken to construct such a barrier, which has no other practical or defensive use, meant that it was designed to hide religious ceremonies from prying eyes. The other side was the ceremonial route to the henge from the River Avon, and this would have been shielded by contours. The palisade would have heightened the mystery of whatever ceremonies were performed, and it would have given those who were privy to these secrets with more power and prestige. In modern terms, you basically had to be invited or have a ticket to get in. Meanwhile, another team of scientists led by Professor Mike Parker Pearson of Sheffield University is working on a collection of partly cremated bones found at Stonehenge in the 1930s by amateur archaeologists. The task has been made very difficult because the remains have been put into two sacks and buried in one spot. The Bible refers to ancient Israel as a land flowing with milk and honey, so it's fitting that one of its towns milked honey for all it was worth. Don't you just love bad puns? Anyway, scientists have unearthed the remains of a large-scale beekeeping operation at a nearly 3,000-year-old site in Israel. Excavations at a huge earthen mound called Tel Rehov revealed the Iron Age settlement. And between 2005-2007, workers at Tel Rehov uncovered the oldest known remnants of human-made beehives. No evidence of beekeeping has emerged at any other archaeological site in the Middle East or surrounding regions. The discovery of an industrially sized apiary at Tel Rehov constitutes a unique and extraordinary discovery that revolutionizes our knowledge of the economy at the time. Nowhere does the Bible actually mention beekeeping as a way of producing honey, and the earliest known depictions of beekeeping appear on a carving from an ancient temple that dates to 4,500 years ago. It shows men collecting honeycombs from cylindrical containers, pouring honey into jars, and possibly even separating the honey from the beeswax. Beehives portrayed in ancient Egyptian art resemble those found at Tel Rehov, as well as hives used today by traditional Mediterranean and Middle Eastern groups. And the team has so far uncovered 25 cylindrical containers for bees in a structure that is centrally located in the ancient city. The researchers are now examining pollen remains and bee bodies that were found in charred honeycombs from inside the hives. A violent fire in ancient time caused the walls surrounding the hives to collapse and destroy many of the bee containers. Radiocarbon, measures of burnt grains from the apiary floor and nearby structures, provided an age for the finds. The team estimates that the ancient apiary contained at least 75 and perhaps as many as 200 beehives. The facility held more than 1 million bees and had a potential annual yield of 500 kilograms of honey and 70 kilograms of beeswax. Songs from Stones, a film inspired by Anglesey's rich and varied prehistoric past, has been premiered at Beaumaris Castle on the Isle of Anglesey in Wales, commissioned by CADU, the Welsh Assembly's Historic Environment Service, and created by artist Sean Harris. Songs from Stones is the culmination of an innovative community project on the island, continuing the pioneering work undertaken with National Museum of Wales to explore Anglesey's prehistoric heritage. Songs from Stones has been shown in a rather unconventional cinema, housed in a converted grain silo that's located in one of the castle's magnificent round towers. Visitors in August have helped to create storyboards, characters, props and noises, which have all been incorporated into the final film. For more information on this, go to CADU's website at www.cadw.wales.gov.uk. Or, of course, get yourself along to Beaumaris Castle and see it for real. A prehistoric moorland site overlooking Bingley in West Yorkshire, England, is to be investigated by a team of archaeologists and members of the local community. The project at Stanbury Hill, on the edge of Bingley Moor, offers a chance to learn more about the Bronze Age past, including rock art, which could have been used as a territorial marker. On the small hill are no less than 22 separate archaeological sites and features, including 18 examples of prehistoric rock art believed to date from the late Neolithic or early Bronze Age, and at least 6 possible early Bronze Age burial cairns and several lines of possible prehistoric walling, as well as find spots for late Neolithic flint tools, all dating to between 2.5 to 2000 BCE. The Stanbury Hill project, a collaboration between Bingley and District Local Historical Society and the Department of Archaeological Science at the University of Bradford, has been set up to investigate the site, and it's been awarded £49,000 from the Heritage Lottery Fund and aims to get local people involved and learn more about their past. Stanbury Hill is a relatively undisturbed prehistoric moorland site. As such, it provides a unique opportunity for both archaeologists and the local community to learn more about the Bronze Age past, especially rock art, as well as providing volunteers with the experience and skills of a real archaeological dig. The project will be officially launched at a public meeting at the Eldwick Village Memorial Hall on Saturday, September the 20th, from 10:30 a.m. to noon. Work will begin during the late summer of 2008, well, which is upon us right now, and is due to be completed before the end of 2009. Those interested will need to attend the event to register. For more information about the project, go to the Bingley and District Local History Society website at bingleyhistory.co.uk, that's B-I-N-G-L-E-Y history.co.uk, or contact Dr. Bowie on keith_bowie@hotmail.com, and I'll just spell that for you. That's Keith, K-E-I-T-H underscore B-O-U-G-H-E-Y @hotmail.com. And apologies if I've hopelessly mispronounced your name. It's normally the Chinese ones I get wrong. Archaeologists have uncovered a small but vital clue to the use of a chariot in Moray in the Grampians of Scotland. The piece for a horse harness was found during the latest dig at an Iron Age site at Burney near Elgin. Dr. Fraser Hunter of the National Museums of Scotland said it was further evidence of the high status of its inhabitants. Glass beads that may have been made at Culbin Sands near Nairn in the Highlands, a dagger and quern stones for making flour have been found previously. Archaeologists, students and volunteers have slowly been excavating 2 roundhouses dating back 2,000 years. 2 further years of work are planned before the site is to be restored to farmland. An open day allowing the public to tour the dig will be held on the 7th of September. Dr. Hunter said that a metal piece for a horse's harness was among the summer's finds, and he said, "It comes from a chariot which was the flashy runaround of the period and may have come from the south of Scotland or the north of England." The team, who have been painstakingly picking through the remains of one of the roundhouses which was badly damaged in a fire, have said that the blaze has fossilised oak timber beams and seeds, but the process of excavation has been described as being like digging a bonfire. Previously, a fire investigation officer with Grampian Fire and Rescue Service and a Grampian Police Scene of Crime get my teeth in. A Grampian Police scene of crime officer helped to determine that the fire was started deliberately. The pair were able to point to a fire being started at the base of one of the inside walls. What is not known is whether it was while the house was still in use or at the end of its life. I wonder if they'll catch the culprits. About 20 years ago, two men exploring Picture Cave in east central Missouri in the USA found paintings on the rock walls and sent hand-drawn reproductions to archaeologist Jim Duncan and Carl Diaz Granados. These things are fake, they thought. Duncan remembered thinking that at the time. As it turned out, the nature and location of the drawings contradicted widely held views about Mississippian culture. The figures on the walls in the cave now provide crucial details of the prehistoric timeline of the region. And there's recent evidence that the paintings in Picture Cave predate the Cahokia Mounds as the birthplace of what archaeologists refer to as the Mississippian period. The Mississippian period saw the creation of some of the first large towns and city centres north of Mexico. The conventional belief has been that this period started around about 1050 CE, but the drawings in Picture Cave indicate that the period began earlier and in a different location. Duncan is convinced the drawings in Picture Cave were made by the same people who constructed the Cahokian sites. This would be a remarkable implication for the history of both the Lower Missouri River Valley and Cahokia itself. A specialist hired by Duncan analysed tiny amounts of organic matter in the pigments of the paint and dated them to mainly between 975 and 1025 CE, with one drawing dating to 800 CE. People who inhabited Palua in western Micronesia nearly 3,000 years ago have achieved new and disputed heights. Contrary to an earlier report that these ancient islanders had unusually small bodies, human remains recently excavated in a Palua cave come from individuals who physically measured up to people today, according to a new report. This is no arcane archaeological dispute. An earlier study of human remains on Palua found them to be remarkably small, and posited that if seafarers quickly took on tiny statures after settling Palua due to isolation and lack of varied resources, then this could have happened on other islands. That would cast doubt on reports that a prehistoric skeleton from the Indonesian island of Flores represented a tiny human-like species called Homo floresiensis, or Hobbit for short, rather than a person with a disorder that stunted their growth. Detailed studies of human remains from Palua suggest that over the past 3,000 years, these individuals were all normal-sized and what you would expect to see in a Micronesian population. The scientists rejected an earlier claim by anthropologist Lee Berger of the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa, that nearly 3,000-year-old fossils from another Palua cave came from people who were roughly a metre tall and have adapted to island life by evolving small bodies. At Orak, adult females stood between 1.5 and 1.57 metres tall, or roughly 5 foot, Fitzpatrick said, and males were slightly taller than that. Berger has underestimated the height of his fossils by assuming that a relatively small socket connecting the upper leg bone to the hip signified dwarf-like height. Don't you just love it when academics collide? Following last year's trial excavation, a team of archaeologists are back in Ede in Orkney in Scotland, investigating the site of a Neolithic settlement at Green on the south coast of the island. The archaeologists from the British Excavation Volunteers and Archaeological Research Society, led by Mick Miles, are spending 4 weeks on the site. Around the middle of last week, the team uncovered an incised stone bearing some similarities to the symbol stone from Poole on Sandy. Expert advice is now confirmed it is likely Neolithic in date. Nick Card, Projects Director at the Orkney Research Centre for Archaeology, was delighted to hear of the Ede team's discovery. Commenting this week, he said that he can certainly see it has similarities with the Poole stone. However, it also reminds him of a similar stone from Ede discovered in the 1980s. The stone also seems to display a proto-double spiral on similar to the Pirawal stones. It's a beautiful find. Other finds so far include a miniature axe head and a polished knife, possibly a reused fragment from another broken axe. The work carried out so far this year has uncovered more of Structure 1. The presence of grooved ware pottery indicates its probable Neolithic building with walls about 1.5 metres thick. The building has been extensively truncated by later activity, and only lower courses of stonework survive. But this has not prevented the team from discovering much more about the site, and I hope when I get back from Jordan we'll be able to follow up more on this story. With the excavations of the Ness of Brodgar in Orkney in Scotland drawing to a close this week, site director Nick Card feels it's time for a major rethink about the landscape of Orkney's Neolithic heartland. The long-held assumption that the Ring of Brodgar and the Standing Stones of Stenness were the centre of activity needs looked at again. He explained, "For centuries people have been coming to the Ness, and because it is dominated by these two massive stone rings, it has become assumed that they were the main Neolithic focus of the area. The Ring of Brodgar, in particular, has become regarded as a ceremonial centre of the Ness. In light of this summer's finds, however, he would question that interpretation, and wonders whether the stone circles were merely on the periphery of the true ceremonial centre, a massive ceremonial complex, fragments of which are now only coming to light. It's becoming clear to us now that this complex, in its heyday, must have completely dominated the entire landscape. With the Brodgar complex situated between two henge monuments, the idea fits well with other British sites where henges seem to have been established to create corridors of movement and ceremony. On the Ness of Brodgar, it certainly appears that this ceremonial corridor would have been funneling visitors towards an important ceremonial point. These visitors would have come from all corners of Orkney, as the diversity of the pottery found on the site suggests that the Ness was the focus for a number of diverse communities." Nick Card concluded that there is something strange about the site when you think about it being enclosed by a monumental Great Wall of Brodgar and its position in the centre of these two stone circles. You begin to wonder about its overall significance. Well, it just remains for me to say thank you very much for coming back to this week's Archaeology News Weekly, and I'm afraid to say that I will be off in Jordan for the next month, where I'll be carrying out work around the rather later Roman city of Jerash. You can actually follow what's going on a video blog, which I'll be trying to keep up to date as much as possible, which will give you sort of live feedback of what's happening. So you expect things like us crawling into tombs, escaping from natives and that sort of thing. If you want to have a look at the video blog, you go along to, well, in fact, best thing to do is just Google Badger Blog, B-A-J-R blog, and that will take you to the video blog of our time in Jordan. I only have a few other things to tell you. The latest issue of the Past Horizons magazine is now up online. That's pasthorizons.com/magazine. That was www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. This issue is packed full of more interesting articles from around the world. It just goes for me to finish off and say that if you want to see more, and of course keep up with all the latest news while I'm away, go to Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. So thanks very much for listening. Keep up with the fun around Jerash over the next weeks, and come back to us on the around about the 6th of October when I get back from Jordan. Thanks now, and goodbye.